They utilize unfamiliar tactics in weaponry, not simple numbers, to overwhelm their opponents. Pharaoh nodded. Back when she first came aboard the Chimera, she'd often been frustrated by the fact that she didn't have a clue as to what Thrawn was seeing in all this artwork, let alone understand how he arrived at his conclusions. Now, she simply admired the pretty pictures and trusted him to know what he was talking about. "Nor do I believe the myth that they are nomadic," Thrawn continued. "Most beings began on planetary worlds and do not easily give them up. Moreover, the images and designs of their ships in these pieces strongly indicate a preference for sun, sky, and soil to the blackness of space. Commander Keymond, your report stated that you observed what you took to be a surprise on the prisoners' faces when they first saw the Chimera."
"Yes, sir. I believe that was their response," Keymond said. "We'll hopefully know more when the medical droids finish analyzing the biosensors we connected to their restraints." Pharaoh forced down a grimace.
That had been her idea, which Keymond had supposedly turned down on the grounds that the Darkhawk didn't have the necessary equipment and that attaching sensors in the first place might warn the prisoners that something special was in the works. Apparently somewhere on the return trip, he'd found both the equipment and the daring to try it. And since her suggestion had been oral and on a closed transmission, and his report was written and fully on the record, he would undoubtedly get the credit for it. In Grand Admiral Thrawn's fleet, such things didn't matter that much. In the rest of the Navy, and certainly on Coruscant, they mattered a great deal. She was pretty sure they mattered to Vader, too.
"That would support your conclusion that they are not nomadic. If they were, a ship the size of a Star Destroyer would not impress them."
"Perhaps," Thrawn said, inclining his head to the other. "But make no mistake," he continued, sending his gaze around the rest of the table. "The Grisks are not to be underestimated. If they fled from combat today, it is because they chose to do so."
"Just like we did?" Keymond asked.
Thrawn's eyes narrowed slightly. "Explain."
"I meant, sir, that we too have the choice of combat or otherwise," Keymond said, his voice steady. "My question was whether you're planning to involve the Empire with these Grisk, a warlike species that doesn't seem to be bothering us."
A dead silence filled the conference room. Thrawn and Keymond sat unmoving, their gazes locked. Pharaoh found her own eyes shifting between Keymond and Vader, wondering if the Dark Lord was going to slap down his Legion commander for such insubordination. Only he didn't. Did that mean Vader himself had ordered Keymond to ask the question?
"When I was first brought before the Emperor," Thrawn said at last, his voice calm, "I warned him there were many dangers waiting to strike from the unknown regions. He took me at my word. Ultimately, he granted me the rank of Grand Admiral. Are you questioning his judgment?"
Keeman's lip twitched, his eyes shifting once to Vader before returning to Thrawn.
"No, sir."
"Good," Thrawn said. "Then be assured, Commander, that when we engage the Grisks, not if, but when," he added, his gaze again sweeping the table, "it will be because they are indeed a threat to the Empire."
His eyes steadied again on Keymond.
"Have you further questions?"
Again, Keymond glanced at Vader.
"No, sir."
Thrawn turned to Pharaoh.
"Commodore, how long until we reach the coordinates I set for you?"
23 hours and 14 minutes, sir,"
Pharaoh reported.
"Good,"
Thrawn said.
"That should allow the engineers sufficient time to finish their initial analysis and permit the officers and crew to rest."
He straightened to his full height. Even sitting down, the move was impressive. In precisely 21 hours, the Chimera will begin a full systems test. 2 hours after that, this ship will go to battle stations.
He looked at Vader, and Pharaoh thought she saw a small smile touch the Admiral's lips.
And shortly after that, he added, we will have the answers that we seek.
One minute, the officer at the helm station called. Lieutenant Agrawal, if Vader was remembering his name correctly.
All weapons ready.
Senior Lieutenant Pirondi added, from the weapons officer station.
Orders, Admiral?
Commodore Pharaoh asked. Vader looked at Thrawn, noting the look of quiet determination there.
Stand ready for navigation, Mark.
Ready for navigation, Mark?
Pharaoh called. She glanced at Vader, as if expecting him to make a comment or possibly give an order of his own. But Vader remained silent. For the moment, at least, this was all Thrawn's show. A flash and fade of starlines, and the Chimera returned to real space.
Navigation, Mark!
Pharaoh snapped.
Sensors at full range!
Mark, hi!
No enemy ships on sensors.
Pirondi called.
Any other objects in range?
Pharaoh asked.
None,
Pirondi said.
Reverse to previous course,
Thrawn ordered.
New course as indicated.
Pharaoh looked at the nav display, a frown creasing her forehead.
Sir?
She asked.
The course is correct, Commodore, Thrawn said. A micro-jump to this point, a second micro-jump to this, and normal hyperdrive to our current position.
Though from a different angle,
Pharaoh said.
Yes,
Thrawn said.
Understood, sir,
Pharaoh said, though it was clear from her voice that she didn't. But at least she and the rest of Thrawn's officers had apparently learned how to follow orders.
Helm, execute as ordered.
The Chimera made 3 more approaches into the blocked hyperlane. The sensors made 3 more scans. The helm added 3 more navigation marks. They were approaching the 4th when Vader finally decided he'd had enough. He took a step closer to Thrawn.
What do you expect to find?
The source of the disturbance.
There is nothing here.
Perhaps, Thrawn said. Did you see the engineer's analysis of the freighter debris?
I did,
Vader said. Changing the subject, he'd observed, was one of the Chiss's favorite tactics. Unfortunately for him, Vader had figured out how to counter that ploy.
The ratio of metals in the fragments was similar to the distribution in an Interdictor cruiser's gravity well projectors.
Indeed, Thrawn said. Then you know what we are hunting.
You hunt in vain.
Vader looked to both sides, making sure no one else was within earshot. This conversation was for him and Thrawn alone.
You think the destroyed Grisk cylinders were gravity well projectors?
It would explain the disruption of the hyperlane, and how the Chimera was pulled out of hyperspace.
Your conclusion is flawed,
Vader said flatly.
To remain undetected, the projector would need to be protected by a cloaking device. Yet as you yourself said, and as the engineers have confirmed, a gravity well and a cloaking device cannot be run from the same point at the same time.
Engineers and their conclusions are sometimes wrong.
Not this time,
Vader said firmly.
I agree,
Thrawn said. Vader frowned.
You agree that there is nothing to find? Then why are we here?
I have said already. To find the source of the hyperlane disruption.
Explain.
There are still uncertainties,
Thrawn said.
I would therefore prefer not to speak at this time.
Vader's left hand unhooked itself from his belt, shifting over a few centimeters
and coming to rest on the hilt of his lightsaber. It was time to have this out.
I am the Emperor's representative,
he said, putting all the dark threat of a Sith Lord into his voice.
You will speak if I so order.
The Emperor placed me in command of this vessel and this mission.
The Emperor does not permit his subordinates to play games.
For perhaps 5 seconds, Thrawn didn't speak. Vader tightened his grip on his lightsaber.
Over my years of service to the Empire, I have sometimes offered explanations without proof, he said quietly. That has never gone well.
What do you mean?
Most people don't believe me. That disbelief then biases them against the proof when it is revealed.
I am not most people.
I know that, my lord. But I would still ask you to trust me.
Vader eyed him, stretching out to the Force. The Jedi, too, had been distrusted, and his opinions casually dismissed, often by the people he was closest to. He, too, had known how it felt to be powerful, yet somehow still an outsider.
Tell me of the prisoners taken from Batuu.
I cannot, Thrawn said. I can say only that it is vital we recover them.
If I demand an answer?
I cannot answer, Thrawn repeated. I can only ask that you trust me.
Vader clenched his teeth.
One cannot simply ask for trust, Admiral. Trust must be earned.
I agree. I ask one more hour.
Vader looked out at the flowing hyperspace sky.
1 hour. And then, Admiral, you will answer my questions.
Chapter 10.
All I'm asking, Anakin said, is that you trust me.
Thrawn didn't answer. He'd been talkative enough at the beginning of the trip, mostly questioning Anakin about the Republic, the Separatists, and the Clone Wars. Anakin's own questions about the Chiss tended to be answered briefly, or not at all. But once Anakin started talking about his plan for getting into the Mokivja facility, all that had changed. Now it was mostly Anakin talking, and the Chiss not answering. On one level, he really couldn't blame his new partner. The plan was borderline crazy, and with anyone but a Jedi, it would be doomed to failure from the outset. But Anakin was a Jedi. More than that, he knew how Separatists thought and acted, and he was very good against Separatist battle droids.
I am a commander of the Expansionary Defense Fleet, Thrawn said. My uniform proclaims my authority.
Which you won't have any of on Mokivja anyway, Anakin said patiently. Even if the locals have heard stories of the Chiss, the Separatists in charge of the base aren't going to be impressed.
He waved at the blaster damage on Thrawn's uniform.
And frankly, what that outfit mostly proclaims is that you were in a major battle, and that you probably lost.
I'm still alive, Thrawn pointed out. Life always tempers defeat.
I suppose, Anakin said. But really, we can do this.
Thrawn looked over at R2-D2, sitting quietly in the corner.
You were making modifications to your droid earlier, he said. Were those modifications part of the plan?
Yes.
Are they detectable by the enemy?
Anakin considered. Technically, if the enemy was very observant, but they almost certainly weren't.
Not without taking him apart, he said.
Thrawn pondered another few seconds.
The plan is rash, but the very boldness argues against the enemy being prepared for it. Very well. We'll attempt it. At the very least, it will bring us past their outer defenses.
Good,
Anakin said, with a sense of relief. This was theoretically a plan he and R2 could pull off alone, but things like this always looked more believable if there was a team.
There are clothes lockers back in the crew quarters. Hopefully something in there will fit you.
Yes.
Thrawn gestured to Anakin's clothing.
What about you and your uniform?
The Jedi don't have uniforms,
Anakin said, looking down at his own outfit.
Neither do the Separatists, really. Their soldiers are battle droids. Ours are armored clones, though our Navy officers and crewers have uniforms. Anyway, you're right. I should probably change into something that looks more local.
And less like the garb of a warrior.
Anakin frowned.
What are you talking about?
Your sleeves are cut to allow exaggerated movements of your arms,
Thrawn said.
Likewise, the long tunic, which appears as if it would impede your movement, also allows freedom of motion. Of equal importance is the fact that in combat, its swirling motion will distract an opponent's eyes.
Interesting,
Anakin said, looking at his clothing with new eyes. He'd always known how easy it was to fight in the outfit, but he'd never focused on the individual details before.
I'll see if I can find something that works as well.
Yet does not appear as a warrior's garb.
Right,
Anakin said dryly.
Tricky, though. Form and function and all that.
He gestured.
If the coordinates are right, we should hit the base 4 hours into full night. We'll find some landing clothes, then run through the plan again. They're bound to ask questions, and I want to make sure we've got answers. No, I'm not Captain Barakliff,
Anakin explained for the third time, putting some strained patience into his voice. A glance out the cockpit canopy showed that the two vulture droids that had flown up as escort were still holding their distance. That was something, at least.
Captain Barakliff is, let's say, indisposed.
I need to speak to him,
the voice at the other end insisted. A Serenian accent, if Anakin was hearing it right. Someone from Count Dooku's home planet of Sereno. Could the Duke be some friend or associate Dooku had set up to run things for him?
Captain Barakliff isn't here,
Anakin growled.
There was trouble at Black Spire. Barakliff and his crew weren't in any condition to fly. Do I have to draw you a picture?
Are you saying they're dead? All of them?
I don't know, Anakin said, because we didn't stick around to see the end. But I can tell you that your boys were definitely losing.
There was a pause.
Why are you here?
Because we've got your cargo, Anakin said. I figured you'd want that, provided you can pay.
Another pause, longer this time.
You can land in the courtyard,
the other said.
Feeding you the coordinates.
What about the shield?
Anakin asked, eyeing the sensor display.
Or do you want me to just fly in under the edge?
Don't be smart,
the other growled.
I'll open it when you need it open, not before. Once you're down, you'll leave the ship, all of you, and wait at the foot of the ramp for your escort. Unarmed. If we see any weapons, we'll kill you.
Yeah, got it,
Anakin said.
See you.
He keyed off the comm.
You get the coordinates?
He asked Thrawn.
Yes,
the Chiss said, gazing thoughtfully at the ground display.
Do Separatist shields in fact end before ground level?
Many shields do,
Anakin said.
When you run them all the way to the ground, the people inside start running out of breathable air. Unless they're just ray shields, of course. In which case, that doesn't matter. But ray shields will let in missiles and torpedoes, so they're not nearly as useful.
Ah, Thrawn said. I also note that factories don't typically have courtyards.
That's probably just what they call their landing area, Anakin said. Having it inside puts the ships under the shield's protection.
It also requires the shield to be opened for each landing and lift.
Thrawn pointed out. That leaves the base vulnerable. A better design would be for the landing area to be outside the base, so the shield would only need to be contracted to the factory's walls to permit travel.
So the place was originally built as something else, Anakin concluded. Not a huge revelation. It's always easier to repurpose someone else's building than put up your own.
Indeed, Thrawn said. But once again, we come to the question of why here.
That's what we're here to find out, Anakin said. Let's do this.
Anakin had been right. The base did indeed look like it had begun life as something else. What that something was, though, wasn't nearly so obvious.
That type of square structure is common to fortresses,
Thrawn said, as Anakin settled them onto their final vector.
The large courtyard can serve as protected storage for air vehicles.
Anakin nodded. The courtyard was currently unoccupied, but it was big enough to hold 4 freighters the Larker's size, or a bunch of smaller craft. At the base's corners were vertical vulture droid anchors, also currently empty. Each of the structure's rectangular sides was about 500 meters long and 100 meters thick, and probably 3 stories tall. Plenty of room and all of that for a factory, a major research facility, or a sizable droid army.
Could be from a pre-shield era.
The walls are too low for most ancient fortresses,
Thrawn pointed out.
Is that the shield generator in the center?
Yes,
Anakin said, eyeing the squat, lumpy shadow sitting on a permacrete foundation in the center of the courtyard.
Looks like something from the KR series. The Separatists like those.
Amazingly compact, Thrawn said. The power supply will be underground?
Probably, Anakin said. But if you're thinking about knocking it out, don't bother. Unless you've got a fleet standing by, that wouldn't gain us anything.
Sadly, I have no fleet, Thrawn murmured.
Didn't think so, Anakin said. Doesn't matter. If Padme's in there, we're getting her out.
He pointed ahead out the viewport.
Looks like that's where they want us to land. See the 4 droids with lights standing in a rectangle?
Yes, Thrawn said. The defined space looks barely adequate for a ship this size.
Yeah, I noticed,
Anakin said with a tight smile.
I guess they want to see how good a pilot I am. Let's show them.
Years of warfare had taught him how to use the Force to focus on flying, maneuvering, and landing a wide range of spacecraft sizes and styles. Not just Republic and Separatist, but independent designs as well. The Larker was no exception, and he managed to set it down perfectly in the space that had been allotted him. He was shutting the engines down when the courtyard abruptly blazed with light.
I see they have lighting after all, Thrawn said calmly.
So they do,
Anakin said, squinting out the viewport. The illumination was coming from a set of 6 floodlights spaced out along the top of the eastern courtyard wall. The one the Larker was currently facing. He leaned forward and looked left and right, confirming that there were no such lights on the north and south walls, while from the shadows it was clear that there weren't any on the west wall behind them either. Above them, the vulture droids that had escorted them in dipped briefly into the light and then headed back out on patrol.
Probably just for unexpected visitors and other special occasions.
A dangerously poor design,
Thrawn said.
Lighting from a single direction creates shadowed regions that can be exploited.
Which is exactly what we're going to do,
Anakin said.
If we're lucky, the lighting controls will be out here, where we can get to them. So keep an eye out for them. Let's get outside before they get nervous.
A minute later, he, Thrawn, and R2-D2 gathered together at the foot of the ramp. Under the dead eyes of 2 full squads of B-1 battle droids, their E-5 blaster rifles trained on the newcomers.
Interesting design, Thrawn murmured. Small, and only moderately armored, but narrow and therefore difficult to target.
They're the workhorses of the Separatist army,
Anakin murmured back.
But don't get comfortable. They've also got droids that are bigger, better armed, and way better armored. Speaking of which, there are two of them now. And, I'm guessing, our host.
A pair of B-2 super battle droids were clomping across the courtyard. A tall, slender human striding along between them. With the light streaming down from behind him, the man's features and insignia were impossible to make out. But streaming behind him was a distinctive cloak, a Serenian symbol of nobility. The same kind of cloak Count Dooku wore.
To our left, Thrawn murmured. Note the vehicle in the corner.
Later,
Anakin murmured back tensely, stretching out to the Force. If that was Dooku, this whole thing was about to fall apart. In fact, it probably already had. With the light squarely in Anakin's face, there was no way the Serenian hadn't already identified him. Still, there was no hint of warning from the Force, nor had the approaching figure so much as broken step. Not Dooku, then?
Note the vehicle in the corner,
Thrawn repeated. Reluctantly, Anakin sent a sideways glance in that direction. Tucked into the northwest corner of the courtyard, attended by another battle droid squad, was a small speeder truck, dark and grimy, with an open-topped rear section. A local vehicle, most likely. A pair of similarly grimy men were standing outside its loading ramp, talking to a man and a woman wearing the same distinctive Serenian cloaks.
An atmospheric craft, Thrawn said. I believe.
Yeah, later,
Anakin cut in, shifting his attention back to the approaching figure and the two B-2s. The human's face was still in shadow, but as he approached, he looked less and less like Dooku. He and his escort stopped 5 meters away.
Well?
He demanded. Anakin felt a flicker of relief. It wasn't Dooku's voice.
Well, what?
He countered. On the other hand, it was the voice of the traffic controller he'd talked with earlier. Someone expendable in case the visitors proved to be dangerous?
We got your cargo. You got our money?
We're a long way yet from talking money,
the Serenian said coolly.
Let's start with who you are.
His eyes shifted to R2-D2.
And why you're traveling with a Republic astromech droid.
Is that what that is?
Anakin said, looking down at R2-D2. It was a ridiculous comment, of course. Astromech droids were way too ubiquitous for a random unit to be instantly connected to the Republic. The Serenian was obviously seeing if he could spark a reaction.
That means it's worth more, right?
You assume we're buying,
the Serenian said.
What makes you think we're not simply taking?
Because we've got more than just merchandise,
Anakin said.
We also got information.
He lowered his voice.
Like how we got this droid in the first place? But we'll only talk to someone who can hand over some real money.
How about you tell me all about it?
The Serenian offered.
And I don't have you shot right here and now.
Sorry, but this isn't the kind of stuff you give a hired hand,
Anakin scoffed.
Don't bother to deny it. I know you're the flunky who vectored us in.
Ha! But even flunkies here have authority,
the Serenian said calmly. He lifted a hand. Abruptly, the B-2 droids snapped their wrist blasters up into firing position.
You can speak, or you can die,
he continued.
Your choice!
Anakin looked at Thrawn.
What do you think?
Courage is a virtue, Thrawn said. Foolishness is not.
I guess.
Anakin turned back to the Serenian.
Fine. Let's start with the woman.
The Serenian seemed to draw back a little.
What woman?
You know what woman, Anakin said. The one your people caught snooping around your ship at Black Spire and killed.
Ah,
the other murmured.
Yes, her. What about her?
Well, for starters, she wasn't alone, Anakin said. She had a whole team with her.
He nodded back at the Larker.
Which is how we got a hold of your ship. Captain Barakliff wasn't going to be using it anymore.
I see.
The Serenian gestured toward R2-D2.
Was that hers?
I don't know, Anakin said. We found it. Okay, here's how it went down. We got to the ship, found a guy trying to unlock the helm, chased him away. We didn't know he'd left the droid till we hit light speed. And then...
He hesitated, as if reluctant to say the rest.
The ship's course was preset, Thrawn put in. It was locked in.
We had no choice but to come here.
Who did that?
The Serenian asked.
I assume Barakliff did before they got him, Anakin said. So we figured as long as we couldn't go anywhere else, we'd deliver the cargo, and maybe you would unlock it, or wipe the whole computer and start over.
I see,
the Serenian said thoughtfully.
An interesting story. I trust you appreciate the fact that you now have nothing left to bargain with.
Yeah, well, that's the thing,
Anakin said.
See, we told you the course was preset. What we didn't tell you was that there was another preset layered underneath it.
What are you talking about?
I'm talking about both sides were playing the same game,
Anakin said patiently.
See, Barakliff put this course into the computer, like I said. But he put it on top of another course the woman had already laid in. I guess she was setting it to fly to wherever her gang has their base. You know, just in case they had to leave in a hurry. I figure Barakliff found it and couldn't erase it. So he just laid his course on top of it. I don't know. Gets kind of confusing.
Don't worry. I'm following it,
the Serenian said dryly.
Good, 'cause it gets pretty tangled,
Anakin said.
Anyway, the other guy, the guy we caught messing with it, I guess he was part of her group and was trying to change it back when we threw him off.
And he had this droid with him,
the Serenian said, his voice dark.
What makes you think he was one of her robber gang?
Well...
Anakin looked at Thrawn and shrugged.
Who else could it have been?
Lugging an astromech droid behind him.
Yeah, that doesn't seem right,
Anakin said, screwing up his face as if trying to sort it all out.
Well, they were trying to steal your cargo. Maybe he stole the droid from someone else.
Perhaps,
the Serenian said.
Was there anything else?
Yeah, one more thing.
Anakin pointed at the B-2s, whose wrist blasters were still pointed at him and Thrawn.
I figured you'd want to know where she was sending the ship. Brix here. This is Brix,
he added, nodding to Thrawn.
Brix thought you might not want to pay us, or even might shoot us. So we kind of locked down the computer.
Locked it how?
Used a two-stage encryption passcode,
Anakin said.
I've got one stage, Brix has the other. You need both of us to get in before you can even start scrubbing off the preset to see the course you put underneath.
I see.
For a long moment, the Serenian looked back and forth between them. Anakin stretched out to the Force, mentally urging him to spot the flaw in their scheme. If he didn't, they would have to nudge him. And then, there it was, a flicker of sudden understanding. If R2-D2 had been present during the encoding, he might have a visual record of the encryption. If the Separatists could pull that out of his memory, the two ship thieves would once again have nothing to bargain with.
You've certainly thought things through,
the Serenian said,
clearly trying to sound chagrined.
I suppose we'd best go inside and discuss what this information is worth.
He waved casually at R2-D2.
We'll bring the droid. He may know more about the thieves.
Long as we get paid, he's all yours, Anakin said. Lead on.
The Serenian made a dismissive gesture to the B-2s, who obediently lowered their arms and blasters.
You two,
he added to the squad of battle droids, still holding their blasters on Anakin and Thrawn.
Go help Palter with the shipment.
Should we check out the freighter?
The lead droid asked.
Team 4 will do that,
the Serenian said.
Wait with Palter until Team 3 gets the workers here. Then help them make sure they get everything unloaded and stacked right.
Roger, roger,
the lead droid said. They turned in unison and headed off across the courtyard toward the dusty vehicle in the corner. The Serenian watched them a moment, then turned and started walking toward a door in the southeast corner of the courtyard, his cloak billowing behind him. Anakin followed, R2-D2 rolling at his side, Thrawn a couple of paces behind them. The two B-2s waited until the newcomers had passed between them, then fell into guard positions on either side. There was the sound of footsteps behind Anakin as Thrawn closed the gap between them.
Beside the door,
the Chiss murmured.
A set of switches, armored conduits lead upward along the walls to the lights.
Anakin gave a microscopic nod in acknowledgement. So not only had the base been built inside an existing building, but the Separatist retrofitting had been a quick job, simply fastening the security lights to what was already there, instead of installing something more permanent. Which suggested that the base wasn't intended for long-term use. Whatever they were up to, they were planning to do it and get out. Another group of B-1s was coming across the courtyard toward the Larker. Presumably the Team 4 the Serenian had mentioned. Anakin eyed the droids, running a quick calculation of their closest approach to him. It wouldn't be perfect, but it would be good enough. Reaching over, he gently tapped R2-D2's side. The droid gave a muffled grunt of acknowledgement and slid open the hidden compartment in the top of his dome. Thrawn slipped around Anakin's other side, striding past the two of them and moving to catch up with the Serenian.
Halt!
One of the B-2s ordered. Obediently, Anakin and R2-D2 stopped, but Thrawn kept moving.
I must speak,
he called toward the Serenian. The super battle droids snapped their blasters up, hurrying to catch up with him, passing Anakin and R2-D2. And with everyone's attention elsewhere, Anakin stretched out with the Force and pulled his lightsaber from R2-D2's dome. He dropped it to just above ground level and sent it floating back behind them across the courtyard. It flew out of his shadow, glinted briefly in the light streaming down from the wall, then angled up from the ground and tucked itself alongside the bent gun arm of one of the two rearmost droids. Out of the corner of his eye, he saw the Serenian jerk to a halt and spin around.
Stop!
He snapped.
My apologies,
Thrawn said, finally coming to a halt. The B-2 droids did likewise, their blasters still trained on him.
I merely wished to ask a question.
Questions can wait,
the Serenian growled, glaring at the Chiss. He looked at the B-2s and gestured their blasters back down.
Come!
The question is important,
Thrawn insisted, not moving. Again, the B-2's blasters came up.
I said otherwise,
the Serenian said. For a moment, the human and the Chiss stood facing each other, locking eyes and wills. Anakin stayed where he was, watching the battle droid patrol continue its march, keeping his lightsaber half concealed beside the droid's arm. This was going to take exquisite timing.
This had better be good,
the Serenian said at last.
You've suggested this droid may have come from the Republic, Thrawn said. The thieves tried to force the freighter to their own destination. In warfare, some believe that if one cannot gain a prize, neither shall anyone else.
For a pair of heartbeats, the Serenian just stared at them. Then, abruptly, his head jerked as he turned toward R2-D2.
Droids! He shouted, backing rapidly away. That astromech! Quick, scan for explosives!
Anakin looked past him to the row of switches by the wall, stretched out with the Force, and opened all of them, then turned his eyes back to the droid patrol. As the floodlights winked out, he caught a glimpse of his lightsaber, falling out of concealment toward the ground, and re-established his Force grip on it. R2-D2 gave a wailing scream, and a chorus of startled human and droid screeches erupted across the courtyard. Anakin ignited the lightsaber and sent it whirling and slashing through the droid patrol. In the heat of a real battle, such a maneuver would have meant quick death. Not only did he have only limited control over the weapon at this distance, but with his lightsaber that far away, he was completely open to enemy fire. But for making it look like a Jedi suddenly appeared from concealment, he couldn't have asked for better. It also wasn't a trick he could play for long. He sent one final slash through the last droid, then closed down the lightsaber and threw it toward the top of the eastern building. He hated to part with it, even for a short time, but someone could turn the lights back on at any second. And the last thing he wanted was for the Serenian to see a Jedi weapon sailing toward his outstretched hand. It was just as well he hadn't dawdled. An instant later, the floodlights came back on, one of the beams catching the lightsaber hilt for a fraction of a second before the weapon arced out of its reach into the darkness. And in the newly restored light, he saw that the courtyard had dissolved into chaos. Droids were everywhere, the two remaining groups of B1s trotting across the open space, their long, cylindrical heads turning rapidly back and forth as they searched for a target. Four more B2s appearing from somewhere and lurching along, their arms stretched out with wrist blasters pointed stolidly in front of them. The two Serenians over in the corner were racing toward the pile of scrap metal that Anakin had just created from the droid patrol, their cloaks flapping behind them, comms held urgently to their lips as they barked out orders. A door at the courtyard's northeast corner opened, and another group of B1s streamed out.
What was that?
Anakin gasped.
You fool,
Thrawn bit out.
The droid was no bomb. It was a distraction. He stowed away aboard our ship.
Oh, Issa Higgy!
Anakin snarled, spitting out a local curse Thrawn had taught him.
Come on! We need to get out of here!
He took off, slapping Thrawn on the shoulder for emphasis as he passed, sprinting past the still backpedaling Serenian toward the door.
Wait!
The Serenian shouted. Anakin kept going, reaching to the Force for warning. If the other was suspicious, or if the B2s were programmed to act on their own. But no double-vision warning came of blaster bolts blazing toward his back. The Serenian had seen the lightsaber, and if he hadn't actually seen anyone wielding it, Anakin knew that human minds and memories were very good at adding in unseen but logically obvious details. Anakin had covered half the distance to the door when he heard footsteps coming up behind him. He half turned, assuming it was Thrawn, just as a heavy hand came down on his shoulder.
I said wait!
The Serenian snapped, forcing Anakin to slow to a fast jog.
You can't be in there alone.
You don't get it,
Anakin insisted. Out of the corner of his eye, he saw Thrawn trailing behind him, running along slightly behind the lumbering B2s, with R2-D2 gamely trying to keep up.
We threw him off the ship! Now he's coming after us!
Don't be stupid, the Serenian said scornfully. Didn't you hear your friend? He let you throw him off so that he could stow away.
What?
Anakin asked, giving the Serenian a bewildered look that gained them another 5 steps toward the door. If he could keep up the charade long enough for him and Thrawn to get out of view of everyone out here, they should be able to ditch the Serenian and lose themselves in whatever maze of rooms and corridors they found inside. They were 10 steps from the door, and he was starting to think this whole thing would go off without a hitch, when the door swung violently open, and 2 more B2s strode out, stopping just inside the courtyard and completely blocking the opening.
But you're right. We don't want him getting to you, the Serenian continued, again getting a grip on Anakin's shoulder. Don't worry. I've got a nice, safe spot for you.
You gotta be joking,
Anakin protested, as he stood in the doorway of his new home. The door, a swing-up panel that was stretched out like a canopy above him, was a slab of transparisteel, attached to the upper cell wall by a pair of hinges the size of his forearm. Aside from 2 horizontal 30-centimeter-long slits, the door was completely solid. The cell itself, 4 meters square and 3 meters high, was made of plain white permacrete slabs. To Anakin's right, Thrawn had already been ushered into his own cell, and out of the corner of his eye, Anakin watched as one of the B1s the Serenian had picked up along the way swung the door down into place across the opening and slid a pair of tapered dowel pins through the fasteners at either side of the bottom edge. Across the corridor, R2-D2 was standing nervously beside the Serenian, with the 2 B2s flanking them. One of the B2s held the prisoner's comms and weapons, including the small holdout blaster in Thrawn's boot that the Chiss had somehow forgotten to mention.
What if he comes after us? Anakin asked again. You're only guessing he wanted us to throw him off.
I don't guess, thief, the Serenian said, finally putting away his calm.
He'd been on it since they all fled from the courtyard, jabbering orders to someone to drag the techs out of bed and put them to work. What the techs were supposed to do, Anakin hadn't been able to figure out from the one-sided conversation.
He wanted to get here, and this was the simplest way to do it.
The man lifted his blaster.
For that alone, I should shoot you.
Your boss wouldn't be too happy if you did that, Anakin warned. You still need us to get your freighter back.
The locker?
The Serenian wrinkled his nose.
It would almost be worth it not to have to listen to your voice anymore.
He drew himself up to his full height.
And for your information, I am the boss. I am Duke Solhar of the Free System of Sereno.
Anakin snorted.
Am I supposed to be impressed?
You will be,
Solhar promised darkly.
Trust me. Now, inside.
Glowering, Anakin backed into the cell. The B1 reached up and took hold of one of the side hasps, pulling the door closed, then lowered the 2 dowel pins into their eyelets. Solhar turned and strode away, pulling out his comm again. The 2 B2s lumbered along in front and behind, followed by a clearly reluctant R2-D2, with the 2 B1s at the rear. And as R2-D2 passed, and only because Anakin was watching for it, he spotted the small drops of lubricating oil begin to slowly drip from the droid's underside. A trail that would hopefully remain unnoticed by the Separatists and allow Anakin to track down the droid wherever Solhar ultimately took him. Assuming, of course, Anakin and Thrawn could get out of here. The footsteps continued down the short passageway and through the outer door that led into the cell block. The door closed with a thud, and he and Thrawn were alone.
You okay?
Anakin called softly, looking around. Like the cell door, each of the walls also had a pair of slits. His first thought was that they were for observing or feeding prisoners, but he realized now that they were more likely ventilation openings.
I'm unharmed, Thrawn said.
as I assume you are as well. Let us review. We're inside the base, as desired, though perhaps not in the most preferred situation.
That's okay. This was always one of the possibilities, Anakin assured him. I know Separatists, and their first answer to any problem is to throw it behind a locked door.
Though he'd hoped that the locked door would be that of an office, someplace with a data port where he and R2-D2 could sift out the base's secrets and figure out where Padme was. Still, the sudden revelation that there was a Jedi on Mokivja had gotten them inside the facility and into a spot where they weren't being watched. Good enough.
I'm glad to hear that, Thrawn said, perhaps a bit too dryly. Do you know this Duke Solar?
Not really, Anakin said. Padme mentioned him once, though. He's from the same planet as Count Dooku. He's got some family, a brother, I think, and maybe a sister.
The other two humans in the courtyard.
Could be, Anakin said. Padme said the whole family's as ambitious as they come.
Is the Duke currently involved with the Separatist politics or military?
Well, he's here, Anakin said. Aside from that, like I said, I don't know anything, other than Padme's one comment. I'm not sure I've ever heard his name mentioned.
My point, precisely, Thrawn said. Count Dooku would need someone who wouldn't be missed to run this facility.
And who was ambitious enough to work for promises of future glory,
Anakin said sourly.
I wonder what Dooku offered him.
With the highly ambitious, there are many options, Thrawn said. What do you propose as our next move?
We run a test, Anakin said. Hold on a second.
Settling himself cross-legged on the thin mattress of the cell's bunk, he closed his eyes and stretched out to the Force, and caught his breath.
There she was.
Padme was here. Not here in the cells, but definitely somewhere close at hand. On this part of the planet, at least. Maybe even near the factory.
She's here, he told Thrawn,
stretching out to try to pick up every nuance of her mood and emotions. She didn't seem to be a prisoner, but there was a dark grimness to her sense.
Somewhere nearby. Possibly in some trouble. I can't tell whether she's worried or just in the middle of something.
Can you communicate with her?
He shook his head and opened his eyes.
Sorry, it doesn't work that way.
A pity. I wonder what she's planning.
Whatever it is, it'll be good, Anakin assured him. She's a lot more clever than most people give her credit for.
A remarkable person, Thrawn said. An equally remarkable association you have with her.
Anakin felt his eyes narrow. He'd taken great pains to conceal his true relationship to Padme.
What do you mean?
It's clear from the way you speak that she's not merely an ambassador of your republic. There's a personal bond between you.
Of course there is, Anakin said. I've known Padme since I was 9 years old. We've been through battles and prisons.
He felt a flicker of pain as the death of Qui-Gon suddenly flashed to mind.
And seen a lot of friends and colleagues die. Too many. Not to mention we've lived through a long war. Yes, we're close companions, but that's all.
For a long moment, Thrawn was silent.
Anakin stretched out to the Force, trying to read the other's sense,
wishing they'd been put together in the same cell, so that he could at least see his expression.
I understand, the Chiss said at last. The first step in locating her is to escape ourselves. Have you a plan for that?
Yes, Anakin said. We start by waiting.
There was another pause.
For what? To see if Padme heard about the ruckus we just pulled off, Anakin said. If she's free and on her own, she'll know I'm here and figure out how to get to us.
She'll recognize your weapon.
She'll recognize my style, Anakin said. and this is the first place you'll come looking for me.
Is falling into enemy hands part of your style?
No,
Anakin growled. Thrawn had a real talent for digging under people's skin when he wanted to.
It's just that you'll start with the most urgent scenario. If I've been captured, I'd need help right away. If I'm still free, the situation is a lot less critical.
And if she doesn't come?
We'll give her 2 hours, Anakin told him. If she hasn't broken in by then, or at least set up a ruckus of her own as a diversion, it'll mean she isn't in a position to act. In that case, we'll get out by ourselves and figure out some other way to find her.
I see, Thrawn said. You clearly know each other very well. As I said, a remarkable relationship.
Anakin took a deep breath, preparing to again fend off the Chiss's inferences.
The local ground vehicle in the courtyard, Thrawn said. Did you recognize it?
Not really, Anakin said. Should I?
It appeared to be an ore carrier of some sort, Thrawn said. Its surface was marked by dirt and stone damage.
So the place is definitely a factory or manufacturing facility, and not a staging ground,
Anakin said with a flicker of relief. He hadn't been looking forward to tackling a whole droid army by himself. The guard complement for a factory, on the other hand, should be much more manageable.
The layout we've seen would support that, Thrawn said. But the ore carrier's cargo didn't appear to be native rock.
Could have been already refined.
Perhaps, Thrawn said. Yet it looked more like fibrous material, such as raw grain or plants. Could this factory be for the refinement of foodstuffs?
Not likely, Anakin said. Not with most of the Separatist army being droids. Though, if there's some exotic food they can sell for quick money, that might be worth all this trouble. The war's bleeding the Separatists as dry as it is the Republic.
Perhaps, Thrawn said, sounding doubtful. Regardless, I believe that cargo is the key.
Right, Anakin said. Any other insights you'd like to share?
I believe this eastern section of the factory is the main center of interest, Thrawn said. There's also activity in the northern section, though to a lesser degree. The southern section holds human workers, most likely locals, possibly slaves, while the western section appears to be unused.
Belatedly, Anakin realized he was staring at the dividing wall between them.
Okay, you're gonna have to explain that one, he said.
My eyes see slightly more into the infrared than yours, the Chiss said. The major heat sources are in the eastern and southern sections, with some lesser amounts in the northern.
So machinery and personnel in those areas,
Anakin said, nodding.
Correct, Thrawn said. The droids all came from the doors in the northern and southern ends of the eastern section, which again supports this area as the most prominent. I also note that the windows in the northern and eastern sections have been permanently sealed with thick slabs of ceramic, indicating the areas they most wish to defend from attack or surveillance. The windows on the western and southern sections are still open.
Where they don't care as much about being seen, Anakin said. How do you figure they're using slave labor?
Isn't that a reasonable assumption from Separatist patterns? Thrawn asked. But I also note that the edges of the corridors we traveled along were less clean than the center. Either the laborers are slaves, who do only the minimum work required, or else they are locals, whom Duke Solha wishes to rush quickly through their jobs, lest they see something he wishes to keep hidden.
And the fact that these cells are also in the eastern wing implies that this is where they can keep the best eye on us, Anakin said.
Indeed, Thrawn said. Though the design of these spaces suggests they were originally storage compartments and not cells. That may make escape easier.
It may,
Anakin said.
So now at least we know where to begin our investigation once we're out of here. And after we find Padme.
Yes. Thrawn paused. Remember what I said about victory being the most important goal?
Yes, Anakin said.
Yes, he remembered. He remembered very well. But that didn't mean he'd ever agreed.
Chapter 11.
The first day, as Padme had expected, was the hardest. She spent the whole day in the unfinished boat's cabin, moving around as little as possible, listening to the occasional sound of vulture droids flying in the distance, listening for the rhythmic clanking that would indicate battle droids on patrol along the dry riverbank, or swishing through the bushes and grasses surrounding it. Fortunately, the vultures never came close. She heard no sign of battle droids at all. The boat itself proved to be more of a problem. The metal of the deck slowly heated up in the sunlight, and by mid-afternoon, the temperature had become oppressive. Still, the additional heat carried its own hidden benefit, making it less likely that any of the vulture droids would pick up her infrared signature. Though it was hard to think that positively, when her clothing was plastered to her body with sweat. Lebjow had promised to come back that evening with food and bedding, but she knew better than to rely on promises from strangers, and so rationed herself to one meal bar and a liter of water for the day. She was feeling hungry and more than a little dehydrated when, to her relief and mild surprise, Lebjow slipped back aboard the boat 2 hours after sunset, with a thin bedroll, some dried meat, bread, and vegetable paste, and 4 liters of water. He also brought the news, equally welcome, that the metalheads didn't seem to have noticed her presence. Still, he was skittish enough about that possibility that he didn't stay long. But before he left, he promised that he would return the next night with more food and water, and assured her that Grubbs would be heading into town the next day to send out her messages. Padme spent the second day sitting beside one or the other of the cabin's rough-edged portals, waiting for droid patrols to make an appearance so that she could start mapping out their routine. But none came within her sight. During the afternoon, she switched to looking up, watching for vulture droids. She spotted a few, but not enough for her to work out any pattern. At first, that bothered her. Separatists were usually better than this at local security. Maybe the operation was smaller than Duja had thought. And that thought really bothered her. For Duja to give her life for an important discovery was one thing. To give it for something minor that would hardly affect the overall war effort was something else. Still, Lebjow had said there used to be more people here, and Simi had suggested that the bulk of the earlier work had been research and development for what they were doing. The fact that this had been a major facility, coupled with the fact that they hadn't simply shut it down and left, suggested that Simi had been right. Whatever it was, though, Padme would see that it was demolished. She owed Duja that much. Though she was still having problems with the reason the factory was here in the first place. Whatever they were doing, why couldn't they do it somewhere else? There were thousands of places closer to home where the Separatists could set up a factory without anyone knowing about it. Was it something to do with the mine? But that didn't make sense either. Granted, high-value cargoes like Dunium or Quadranium attracted pirates and thieves, and might easily come to the Republic's attention. But losing a cargo or two en route would hardly be a disaster. Even if it opened the possibility that this secret base wouldn't remain secret. Unless it was supposed to be a secret from everybody. Could this be some faction of Separatists trying to build up funds or resources without the rest of the Confederacy knowing about it? If so, that might be the crack in Separatist unity that Coruscant had been desperately hoping for. If the member systems or corporate backers fell into squabbling among themselves, the whole thing could collapse in a matter of weeks. That might explain the puzzling lack of security, as well as the absence of high-end programming droids. The fewer the personnel and the fewer the droids, the easier it would be to keep anyone from noticing that valuable resources were inexplicably missing. It was an intriguing thought. It also led to another, even more intriguing one. If the Separatist droid patrols were really cranked back down to barely visible levels, maybe Padme could sneak up river and see what exactly they were digging out of the ground. Anakin would disapprove of such a plan, probably vehemently. But Anakin wasn't here, and until he arrived, there was precious little else that Padme could do. If she could at least find out whether it was Dunium, Quadranium, or something else, they might have a head start on figuring out what the Separatists were making. She spent the next couple of days studying the maps of Mokivja that Duja had included in her report, looking for a path that might get her to the mine undetected. The fastest way would be to cross the river and make her way through the town on the far side, where most of the region's roads connected. But interacting with locals required local clothing and money, ideally accompanied by local speech and mannerisms. The speech and mannerisms she couldn't do much about, but the money and clothing were another matter. The obvious source for such things was Lebjow, but cultivating the big man proved surprisingly hard. Lebjow's second visit was just as brief as his first. For all his willingness to take a few risks to help her out, he was clearly still afraid that the metalheads might catch them together. Padme tried to get him to sit down and talk, but he brushed off her efforts and disappeared back into the night and the factory. Still, for all his obvious fear, it was also obvious that he found her intriguing, and not just because of her family's supposed wealth. On the third night, she finally managed to exchange a few sentences with him, focusing her questions on his day and his plans for the boat once the Separatist left. The fourth night saw the conversation stretch out a bit more. Finally, on the fifth night, she broached the subject of new clothing, suggesting that her outfit was starting to chafe from lack of proper cleaning and repeated exposure to her own sweat in the daily heat. But even her best smile and the full range of her diplomatic skills couldn't make any headway against his fear that a set of missing clothing might be noticed even faster than missing food, bringing the Separatists down on him. She spent the next day sweating, studying maps, and trying to find an alternative route to the mine area. When Lebjow appeared again, at his usual 2 hours past sundown, she could sense that something was different, starting with the food itself.
"This is really good,"
she told him, as she bit off a piece of the dried fish that had come instead of the usual slice of meat.
"Is this one of the fish you caught the night I arrived?"
"Yes," he said. "Not too dry, is it?"
"No, it's fine,"
she assured him.
"The spice mixture complements it perfectly, too. Thank you."
"No problem."
He sat in silence while she ate a few more bites.
"I've been thinking about you wanting new clothes."
"It really would help,"
she said, hunching her shoulders as if the material was sticking to her skin, as it actually had been earlier in the day.
"I told you I couldn't get anything that wouldn't be missed," he said. "Not a lot of women here, and nobody has more than a couple of changes of clothes. But maybe there's something else I can do."
"Any help you can give me would be wonderful,"
she assured him.
"Yeah."
He took a deep breath.
"Okay. Here's the thing. You can't come into any of the work or living areas without one of these."
He pulled back his sleeve to reveal a bright yellow wristband.
"It lets you get through the doors. Not the big main doors,"
he added,
"but all the little ones, where they don't mind us going."
"So there's some kind of transponder inside?"
Padme asked.
"I guess,"
Lebjow said.
"The metalheads also make spot checks sometimes in the south wing, where most of us live. You get caught without one, and they'll take you to the bins.
Padme frowned.
Mokivja factories come with their own prisons?
No, the bins were storage compartments for extra valuable stuff,
Leb Jow said.
The Duke changed them into holding cells for people who break the rules or go where they're not supposed to. Anyway, what I was going to say is that we're not using the West Wing at all. If you're quiet and don't go near the windows during the day, you could probably hide there until Uncle Anakin gets here with the money.
Really?
Padme said, feeling a surge of hope. Wristband or no wristband, if she could get into the factory proper, she could at least get started on some rudimentary surveillance.
What's it like in there?
He shrugged.
Quiet. Empty. Everything movable was taken out when the Duke showed up and kicked everyone out. But our back door into the wing isn't easy to use. Once you're in there, you're not getting out without my help.
That's okay,
Padme assured him.
Not much different than here, really. Except more comfortable. When can we go?
I want to make sure you understand,
he persisted.
You can't go into the South Wing where we are. Not without a wristband. The only way into the West Wing is through the service level underneath everything.
Padme pricked up her ears. There was a service area that offered access to the whole place?
They haven't blocked it off?
They've blocked off everything that matters,
Leb Jow said.
Like the refinery areas?
There's no refining here,
Leb Jow said, sounding puzzled.
Why would there be? The stuff they're bringing in just needs sifting and sorting, and that's all done in the western part of the North Wing. After that, they take the stuff to the East Wing and the eastern part of the North Wing.
Ah,
Padme said. So it wasn't Dunium after all.
You said you used to work in one of the electronics factories. Where was it?
West Wing, third floor,
he said.
But like I say, once you're in, you're not coming out. And there's still no guarantee the metalheads won't catch you.
You said all the important work is in the north and east wings,
Padme reminded him.
So that's where the metalheads will be watching. Shouldn't be too many left to bother with the west wing.
Leb Jow sighed.
Okay, if you're sure,
he said.
I just want to make sure you know what you're doing.
I do, Padme said. Just get me inside the west wing. I'll handle everything else.
His eyes narrowed